But yeah, stay tuned for Luke Meaden. Keep listening to CITR 101.9 FM.
I'm at war. I'm at war with myself. I'm at war with you. I'm at war with everybody. That's why I don't do drugs. Because I don't want to be numb. I want to feel the pain. I want the clarity of the challenge. I want to win. I want to kick in the head. I want to tear the throat box out. I want to smash in the lungs. I want to kick in the rib cage. I want to split the spine. And I want to use your phone, make love to your wife, sister, eat your dog, and leave your house with a good cassette.
CITR 101.9 FM, where there's just a little bit of Kim Fowley in each and every one of us.
No, I don't think so.
What do you like?
I love picnics.
What do you like?
I like me first, then my sisters and brothers.
What do you like?
Hitting this tin can with a spoon. Ah.
What do you like?
Messing up a room.
What do you like?
I like pina coladas.
What do you like?
Dead burnt bodies.
What do you like?
Sadists.
Known perverts and Mormons.
What do you like?
Noise!
It is 11:30 a.m. on a Wednesday. That means it's time for a noise here on the almighty CITR 101.9 FM in glorious Vancouver, British Columbia, atop of the Student Union building here at the University of BC. Coming up in the next hour and a half, a very special show happening this weekend just a little south of the border in the lower 48. Sub Pop is celebrating its 20th anniversary, a very, very, very influential label on not only the music scene, but the world in general. I'm going to be scooping down there to check it out. I'm excited as a schoolgirl. What we're going to focus on, though, this for the next hour and a half is basically the noisier side of Sub Pop. Sub Pop signed a lot of experimental bands through its 20-year career, and we're going to be kind of focusing on them. But yes, we're going to pull out some of my favorite gems on the Sub Pop label. Right now, we're going to start off with a very, very rare track by a band that's reuniting this week. This is a limited edition, live at WFMU, Comets on Fire.
Thank you.
Thank you. hell. Church in 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 hell.
CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. This is A Noise. Luke Meat here at the helm, celebrating Sub Pop's 20th anniversary. And although not necessarily a Canadian label, they were close enough to Vancouver to affect eventually what became certain bands of sounds in Vancouver, and certainly the scene in Vancouver in the early to mid 90s. Right now, yes, your ears do not deceive you. You're listening to Skinny Puppy. Believe it or not, Sub Pop put out this track on Sub Pop 100, their 100th release compilation record. And it even says BC 1985. This was kind of a challenge for listeners of the Sub Pop genre because it came out in, I think it says 1994 here, but it was after they had kind of gotten known as kind of the grunge label. And so they put out this compilation of some of the more challenging stuff, including bands such as Scratch Acid, the U-Men, Naked Raygun, Steve Fisk, and Shonen Knife, of all people. Great stuff, though. Essential in any record collection. Before that, in the set, you heard probably one of my top five favorite albums of the 90s, The White Birch by Codeine. I like the album so much, you heard two songs off of that. You heard the first two there. You heard Sea and Lost Leader. And there are several people on the Sub Pop website begging for Codeine to reunite and make a surprise appearance this weekend out in Redmond, Washington. And we started you off there with a band that is reuniting and playing at Redmond, Washington, Comets on Fire. That was off their limited edition tour single. And that was two songs there. You heard The Unicorn, which is Ben Chansey, best known for Six Organs of Admittance, his nice little acoustic intro. And then they go right on into Ice Age off of their debut album, Field Recordings from the Sun. That was live at WFMU. Well, we're going to keep on with the Sub Pop love, and we're going to feature, well, some pioneers in a genre of music. We're talking about The Drone, now known as Sludge Metal. Which I'm not really, I think Drone is a much more adequate title, but Earth is an American drone band based out of Seattle, Washington, formed in 1990 by Dylan Carlson, Slim Moon, and Greg Babier. Although they have played various styles of music, they are best known as the pioneers of a minimalistic, long, and repetitive form of heavy music known as drone. Later in this decade, a certain band by the name of Sun, or Sun-O, if you will. Huge, huge Earth fans. And as a matter of fact, that's kind of a double entendre name, the Sun tribute, because Sun is a tribute to Earth, but it's also a tribute to the amp that they use, the Sun amp with a zero and a three brackets beside it. becoming a very, very popular form of music. Really long, drawn out. You drop your guitar's strings down to the lowest possible frequency. You drop your bass amps frequencies down to the lowest possible frequency. And you make this stomach-churning drone music. Well, back in 1993, Earth put out their second record, which is probably my favorite one by them. This is the special low-frequency version of Earth. This track is 30 minutes long. I'm not going to play the whole track. I've got way too much music to get through. But Earth can be pretty challenging. So over top, throughout the Earth track, we're going to hear some snippets about Sub Pop and the Seattle music scene. So stay tuned, and we'll be back to talk to you at about maybe quarter past. Okay, enjoy. This is Earth.
Abbott originally had the name Sub Pop when he was living in Olympia, I think. He had a sort of cassette fanzine network where he put out these little compilation cassettes of local bands.
He was interested in making it a vinyl magazine. The bands he was interested in at the time were Green River and Us. And John also was a huge fan of ours. He wanted to make a record, start a record label. So we kind of talked them to working together to put out our record.
Up to that time, everyone played it really safe. All the small labels. Well, we'll put out a single every 3 months and, you know, we'll sell 1,000 copies of it. And that's cool because I've got my day job, and John and Bruce were having none of that. They said, you know, we don't want to work day jobs. We don't want our bands to work day jobs. We want them out there on the road. We want them in the big magazines. We want their records everywhere. It is punk rock, but we don't care. We want to make it bigger than punk rock. And that's why these two gentlemen are the kings of the scene, as you might say.
There was a real indie ethic in the 80s that you weren't supposed to be proud of having hit records or being a hit machine. And John and I, as fans of, you know, the history of pop music in this country, really admired labels like Motown and their hit factory
mentality.
Yeah.
They definitely picked a certain kind of band for their label, which makes everybody think that that's the only thing that was going on in Seattle. By default, I ended up engineering all of them, and they had Charles doing all the photography, so there was definitely a package and an image and a sound.
I think every community has their pools of talent. It's just a matter of being able to take on the responsibility of marketing. You know, I'm a failed pop musician myself, so, you know, I kind of decided, well, I'm going to play in crummy band after crummy band. I may as well rep some of these bands who might have a chance at doing something.
Basically, he said, hey, you sing about dogs, you sing about being sick, you got a shtick, it'll take you to the top. And he basically gave us like 5 chords, but he said, don't use more than 3 within one song.
When Sub Pop finally got their act together and they started somehow getting this underground hype thing going, which started very small, they flew an English journalist into Seattle. They took him to see a Mudhoney show and gave him some singles and, you know, had him meet everybody. And he went back and wrote a big article in one of the English music papers, and that sort of started this big frenzy in England.
It just seemed like it was a worthwhile business move, so we...
Yeah, and fortunately, Everett was a brilliant enough guy that he could piece together a story that essentially sold the world on Seattle.
Love me, I'm rich!
Sub Pop, the hype machine, and we went along with it. It seemed pretty funny at the time.
They didn't really hype their bands. They hyped their label, which is a much different thing and a much, much more original thing.
It gave a record this desirability, this perhaps fictional desirability, but nonetheless it made the collectors try and get a hold of these things and made people talk about them. So a lot of people talked about Sub Pop and how cool their records were and how cool the packaging and the bands were cool. And, oh, you can't get the record, it's worth a lot of money already.
People started looking for the Seattle sound the same way that DC and Boston, New York and LA and all those places had this crazy little identity all of their own. Seattle started getting its own identity, and Sub Pop decided to exploit that.
Thank you.
once that there was the aesthetic of dumb about the Seattle music scene, that the music wasn't stupid, but it was dumb. You know, Mudhoney's not stupid, but they're a little bit dumb.
My mom has always told me that I'm not a loser. So the whole loser thing, I never believed in, because clearly I'm not a loser. And Mark, I think your mom has told you the same thing. We're not losers.
I guess it's really easy to think of yourself as a loser because then you don't care if people like you or not. You know, that's sort of the idea. And then you can do whatever you want.
And it's funny.
We were the guy in high school who people used to beat up. And we couldn't even talk to the pretty girl. I mean, we couldn't. We're nerds, goddammit!
Well, I think ever since Spinal Tap came out, I mean, they were like pointing the finger at bloated, overly commercialized, diluted bands. And we just looked at ourselves and said, well, we don't have to point at somebody else. We can. Dick. They are giving you a show. Some bands get up there and they rock, and you can tell the difference. That's why Seattle bands tend to be a little bit inconsistent live, I think, is because most of them aren't really up there to be entertainers. They're up there to rock out. And their best shows are when they're having the most fun, not when they necessarily have their act down, because maybe they don't have an act.
If it's connected.
I became aware that there was a certain regional sound developing, and nobody had a name for it.
That's punk rock, and one day they just sort of started going, and that was grunge.
The most noisy.
The music of Seattle is as progressive as the people. Listen to Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, Nirvana. Where else can you get the Seattle sound? Best Buy.
Once there was this grunge singer who did all the things grunge singers would do.
You get on a carpet. I'm drinking from the toilet.
It's just a habit.
Where that smell you smell, it's not from me.
It's loud music with heavy vocals.
Is it mutant rock and roll?
Have we ever used chainsaws and axes?
Are they contributing anything to the world they're taking so much from?
Mudhoney's sort of like watching the market right now.
In October 1993, this group's Versus album debuted at number one with sales of 950,000 copies. Jeremy.
Who is Pearl Jam?
Yeah.
Pop music for 400.
Does this look like we're unhappy or cynical?
Playing the posies.
Weird Al Yankovic.
Pearl Jam!
Hey, butthead, where's Seattle?
Seattle.
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 Seattle? Thanks, phone dude.
I think now's the time that I should be announcing my candidacy for mayor of Seattle.
When the whole thing was just out of control and press people were visiting our office at the rate of two or three a week, it seemed like very few of them had even the most remote clue of what was really going on in Seattle.
Glossy print ad with a fancy red car and a background, and they're saying something about grunge. I think people are going to go out and buy this car. They're going to look at this ad and go, fuck you.
When you're close to something, you feel you know the truth about it. And when People Magazine's writing about it, you know they're not going to have the truth. They have a very distorted view of it. And you realize that that's what the entire world sees, and that's what the entire world thinks about, and they're wrong.
Nothing to do except just start poking fun at the entire thing. And so instead of saying, no, I really don't know that person, it would turn into, oh, sure, every Monday morning we eat banana splits at breakfast time. Shooby-Doo used to be my roommate, or, you know, I'll tell you, he has a horrible case of the squirts after he has Indian food. And, like, you just start making up every single lie you can, and then the goal was to just get crazy rumors circulating all the time.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it. The Music of Earth off of their second album, Earth 2, special low-frequency version. The track you heard there was Teeth of Lions Rule the Divine. 1993 Sub Pop Records. Featuring, this is just for interest's sake or whatever, but featuring Dylan Carlson, Kurt Cobain's best friend, and most infamously known for the as the man who sold Kurt Cobain the shotgun. What can you do? However, that could just be a rumor that was brought up in the kind of documentary style you heard there. Those were clips from the movie Hype. If you haven't seen it, check it out. Fantastic stuff. Tons of people right from the horse's mouth there. You heard snippets from Mark Arm from Mudhoney, Tad Doyle, Eddie Vedder, a whole bunch of guys from Sub Pop, including Mr. Bruce Pravitt. And I love that beard, Bruce. I hope you have it when I see you on Saturday. We're going to move into some more noise territory here that Sub Pop happily represented. A two-piece from Idaho. Back in the day, it was fairly considered quite odd what Mr. Mike Lastra and Tim Green were doing. But they're better known as... I'm sorry, I got the names wrong there. Sorry, we got Mike and Dan. Two-piece, better known as Godhead Silo. And they came in to Seattle with Calvin Johnson and recorded this wonderful, wonderful album, Skyward in Triumph. And they managed to get on a bill with Sebado. And when they came up here, I'm still kicking myself for missing this gig. But they opened. And the drummer uses every single large, like the largest drums on the face of the planet, including... I think something like a 60-inch, like, we're talking orchestra bass drum and stuff like that. And the bassist uses every single possible low frequency that he can get. And needless to say, back in 1996, it absolutely alienated the Sebado Vancouver audience. And I heard that while they played, people were just leaving, particularly when they played this song. Now... I'm just going to warn you, my disc is not skipping, so don't call me to tell me that my disc is skipping. Yeah, great, great, great stuff. This is Guardians of the Threshold by Godhead Silo on a Noise. We'll be right back.
microbe. We're at 8,000 feet. Perishing cold and I'm bored stiff. What about putting on a hot gramophone record to cheer me up?
Hello? Hello? Is this Harlem 77711?
Hello, fellas. This is Duke Ellington.
Get it. Pause. Let's get sweet and hot.
In the opinion of hot music critics, Count Basie has one of the best dance orchestras in the country.
King of the clarinet, Artie Shaw, and his orchestra making dance history in the ballroom of the Hotel Lincoln in New York City.
Every Thursday from 10 till noon, join me, your host, Charles Burnham, for Sweet and Hot, a celebration of the 78 RPM record, the three-minute masterpiece, and the golden age of North American songwriting. Hot jazz, swing, and popular music from the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. That's every Thursday from 10 till noon here on CITR 101.9 FM.
Did you enjoy that blue bottle?
That's a swell record. I must get it. What's his number?
What a swell way to wake up on a Thursday morning. Sweet and Hot every Thursday from 10 to 12 on CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to a noise here. What you just heard in that last 15 minutes, some Godhead Silo. And yes, a 8.5 minute one note bass solo. Can you beat that? So we're going to lighten it up here. We are focusing on Sub Pop being 20 years old and the festival that's happening in Redmond this weekend. I hope you're excited as I am. There's a lot of cool things going on, a lot of reunions that I never thought I'd see in this lifetime at all. And so later in the show, we'll be focusing on that. At 1 o'clock, though, stay tuned. Green Majority is on CIUT's hosted environmental talk show, 2 o'clock, Democracy Now! Ms. Amy Goodman, 3 o'clock, Garage Time with Rumbletone Radio, a go-go with Frank Rumbletone, 5 o'clock, Canadian Voices, hosted by CJLY, 6:30 this week, Sam Squatch's Hideaway. Now, if you're in the mood for Sub Poppy kind of stuff, I know that Anita, host of Sam Squatch's Hideaway, is the hugest Eric's Trip fan, and Eric's Trip, we're going to be in our city tomorrow night at the Plaza, but so I got a feeling that it's going to be fairly trippy in an Eric Skynyrd style. 8 o'clock, Folk Oasis with Val. And I know Val's going to Sub Pop too, actually, so that's kind of cool. 10 o'clock, Juice Box with Juliet. And 11 o'clock, Hans Kloss with Hans Kloss's Misery Hour, who gave me a call during that one note solo. And he just said, "You got to be kidding me." And yes, I love you, Hans. Anyways, moving on here. One band, there, like I said, on the Sub Pop website, there are a bunch of requests of bands that were on Sub Pop that are probably not going to reunite ever, let alone just for this weekend or whatever. But this is one that came to mind, and I always dug them, and don't know why. Don't know what's become of them either, actually. If anyone knows, give me a shout here at 822-2487. But this is a band from New England. It's kind of, they're pretty cool. I saw them live many, many moons ago. I think I saw them with Zampano or something like that. And this is some crazy Devo-esque moogness. This is Six Finger Satellite.
Thank you. do you think it'll be before I can do the show?
You're starting tonight.
We'll do it live! If you talk to the average teenager of today and you ask them what it is about rock and roll music that they like, the first thing they'll say is the beat, the beat, the beat.
The Biltmore Cabaret at 395 Kingsway is Vancouver's newest live showroom devoted to independent music of all genres.
But a lot of these groups are nothing but pure carnality and fleshly and so forth. But
check out BiltmoreCabaret.com for upcoming show info and DJ nights.
You're pretty happy with the way you look and the attitude you've got, are you?
Oh, well, I am. I hope you are. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. This is A Noise, just wrapping up in the next 15 minutes. What did you just hear there? You heard Kinski, yet another Seattle band that is going to be at the Sub Pop 20th Anniversary Festival. That was off their second last album, Alpine Static, with The Party That You Know Will Be Heavy. And Lord knows I've had a few, more than a few heavy parties with that band. Kinski, very good friends. Can't wait to see you guys. They were starting off there with a sadly defunct band, Six Finger Satellite, off of the Pigeon Is the Most Popular Bird, and their debut album all the way back to 1993, maybe? Anyone? That was Laughing Larry. And yeah, very mysterious band, those guys. No one knows what kind of became of them. They slowly got rid of it. They started out with five, then four, and then when I saw them, they were a three-piece. And I remember flipping out on the lead singer because he hadn't heard Stereo Lab yet. And he just kind of dismissed me, as he should. Anywho, we're going to focus on now the softer side of Sub Pop. And yes, I do. I'm going to reveal something to you. I'm not the, as always, the crazy noise guy that only listens to intolerable things. Yes, I do enjoy melody once in a while. And Sub Pop's always been there and very reliable for that kind of thing. One thing I've always admired about Sub Pop is their attention to Canada. And one thing that they kind of created, at least to us on the West Coast, was the belief in the East Coast scene, namely the Nevermind the Mollusks compilation 7-inch, which gave us bands like Eric's Trip, Thrush Hermit, and this band we're going to hear right now. And yeah, we're going to hear, wow, so this is probably the, get your tape recorders ready, because this is the only time you're going to hear this kind of music on this show. This is Jail.
Yeah.
The Vaselines, who are reuniting and playing one show only. As far as I know, one show only at Sub Pop 20 this weekend in Redmond, Washington. Part of the Sub Pop 20 festival happening this weekend. Vaselines' first North American performance ever. And you have Sub Pop, I think, we'll name the Kurt Cobain, but Sub Pop in general, to kind of thank why the world knows who this band is. This album came out, The Way of the Vaselines, A Complete History, after the band had broken up. If there's any indie scenesters out there who remember the band Eugenius, you know that that was the aftermath of the Vaselines. But you heard Teenage Jesus. But the Vaselines brought famous about by Nirvana in particular, who covered a slew of their songs, including Son of a Gun and Molly's Lips and Jesus Doesn't Want Me for a Sunbeam. Either way, they're playing this weekend. Before that, you heard, like I said, the more sensitive side of Sub Pop. You had the Fastbacks off of Fastbacks and his orchestra with K Street, probably my favorite song by them. And then we started you off there with a gaggle of girls from Canada, Jail, off of Dreamcake. Received a few calls in surprise on that track, actually. Thanks a lot. But you heard Not Happy, their posthumous hit. And anywho,